Welcome to the latest and greatest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. Stu, we just taped an episode recently, but
we're back for more.
Yeah, the wildest day. I got to admit, so this, I was out having beers last night when there was a group text, you know, that you were on and I was on about Nick Saban's comments Wednesday night. And man, did Jimbo Fisher respond with a blowtorch on Thursday morning. And I was thinking about this. To me, the most shocking SEC press conference that I can remember in college football was Bobby Petrino in the neck brace talking about infidelity or not talking about it, you know, after the motorcycle ride. This to me blew that out of the water.
No, this to me is the college football. The closest college football has come to that infamous John Chaney threatening to kill John Calipari in basketball. We just don't see coaches on the record directly accusing each other of cheating. And now
of
you
this
have
magnitude, of this magnitude. And Jimbo, first, it's basically Nick Saban, who the GOAT as it relates to college football coaches. Jimbo Fisher's won a national title. They're big voices, and it got dirty fast.
It went from Nick Saban, I think we'll never know what his true intentions were, trying to edge. He was at a public event, you know, with probably a bunch of Alabama fans in Birmingham. And it seemed like he was trying to educate them about collectives and how the NIL thing has spiraled, and basically putting out a call for them to participate. And at one point he was, you know, it'd be great if we could get support for our teams and da, 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 da. And then right towards the end, he went there. Texas A&M finished ahead of us in recruiting, and they bought their whole. It was so shocking that when I first saw the first tweet from a reporter, I was like, I'm going to have to see the audio. I hear the audio of this before I retweet this. Because I just don't believe he said the words bought their whole class, but he did. And then Jimbo comes back and he said about 10 different things in his thing in press conference this morning, that if he had only said that one thing, it would have been front page news, including, and I think this is being overlooked, he suggested that perhaps somebody should slap Nick Saban in the head. you know, he said, we're done. Their relationship is over. He's not taking Saban's calls. He suggested 10 different ways that people should go dig up all of the ways that he procured players over the years. And then, of course,
he called him a narcissist. This is his old boss. Called him a narcissist. Some people think they're God. Go dig into his past. And now how he's done things.
Nobody's ever really directly challenged Nick Saban in even a mild way. There's always been a deference of he's the GOAT, and you know we're going to try to beat him. But nobody, as far as I can recall, has ever even gone in a little bit on him in the profession. It's always been, oh, we respect him so much, including all his former assistants. Now, you immediately started calling coaches that would be connected to one or both of these guys. What was the reaction?
Okay, so first, I didn't just start calling. I was starting to hear from coaches. Like, the thing that was amazing with this was people knew it was coming because there was like, Jimbo's going to talk at 10 a.m. local time. So, and people could watch it. It was like, holy crap, what the hell is happening? And it was a lot of coaches, all not just SEC coaches. Now, I had one who I had asked about the Saban component of this and was like, and this is somebody who knows Saban very well and has worked with them. And, you know, I had said to this person, I'm curious if Nick really just slipped by using the word bought, you know, last night, and it crossed the line that maybe he didn't intend to cross. Cause I feel like everything with him is so calculated.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we've both been in meetings with him or settings with him where it's a group of reporters before he goes to the big podium at SEC Media Days. And it's very calculated what he wants to get out and what he wants to drive. And he's shrewd at it. This person thought, I don't think this was calculated. It was just like his emotions got going and it was something he can't control. And that really set him off. And then, so I started hearing from other people. I had reached out to Lane Kiffin, I said, thoughts on that circus? Speechless for the first time in my life, Lane Kiffin said. And, you know, he was like, I'm watching this thinking this can't really be happening. Is this real life? He was like, I still haven't moved from my seat. Should have been on pay-per-view. By the way,
all the SEC coaches have a meeting in less than 2 weeks in Destin, Florida. Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, Lane Kiffin, who also has a rivalry going with Jimbo now, all going to be in the same room.
Yeah, I would think, it's a good thing that the Arkansas coach has a lot of O-line experience. Maybe he can separate these guys, because it's wild. You know, there was another thing I heard from a different SEC coach, and it's, it kind of gets to the core of, I think, why some of this was so shocking on both sides of this. And I have to read it because it's almost like, two at the core. There has always been, quote, an honor among thieves mantra in this league. And those two just called each other's wives fat to a global audience. It was just like, oh my God, there were so many layers, I think, that were just, as you kind of, touched on in the beginning. And as we've talked about how nuts this is. Now, I think one of the things that came to the surface, Jimbo Fisher, like his comments, we've never bought anybody. A lot of people in coaching had real problems with that. Just thought that's not true. And look, a lot of these guys, they work together at LSU, but a lot of people have worked with them.
So they think that's not true, that Jimbo's never bought a player, but what about Saban?
I don't. A lot of people who think you're not getting number one, they're all recruiting from the same pool of players. One of the things that I thought was, go back to Hugh Freeze, and this is where it felt a little like there was Hugh Freeze's comments, and it was like, I think I had retweeted it years ago. It was like, hey, if anybody wants to question this, go, here's our compliance email address, and people had a field day with that. But remember, Hugh Freeze lost some five-star recruits to Mississippi State back in those days, and it's like, I think getting back to that quote about the honor amongst thieves part was that at that level, when it's coming to, not every five-star recruit was getting a lot of money, but a bunch were. You go back to the Albert Means days, it's just like, that is a different game. And it's been kind of an unspoken thing that there's been innuendo and nobody's been able to pin it down. And there's been some plausible deniability. Here's the part with Jimbo, talking about, we've never bought anybody, and people are like citing stuff of, past recruits that he was involved with, going, I don't know about, if I was Jimbo, I'd go that direction. Now, I do want to bring up something you had tweeted from an agent that who's become very involved in shopping players in NIL in the last 6 months. And why don't you read the quote and we can kind of discuss it a little.
Well, it's Mike Caspino, who now he's the lawyer. He's become the go-to lawyer for recruits making deals with collectives. He was the one who made the $8 million deal that we reported a couple months ago. And this is what he told me. Having worked with A&M's collective, everything Jimbo Fisher said is 100% correct and true. He didn't violate any bylaws if you keep the collective separate from the school. A&M and their collective are just very good at what they do, which the people who have quote tweeted it immediately got what he was referencing, right? It's 10 different versions of, oh, so what Saban is true. Oh, so Nick was right. This is exactly what Saban said. This is what Saban said. He used NIL to get their class. So exactly what Saban said is correct. So he's saying,
here's my issue with what your quote is from him. And I'm not giving, look, we quote people. It's not like our job necessarily to say, hey, to squabble with them and be like, no, that's, in that case, it's BS. But like this guy who has been an agent, shopping recruits for whatever the last, few months, he's not in a position to know that when he says everything Jimbo Fisher said in that press conference is 100% true. He doesn't know that Jimbo Fisher's never bought a player or has been part of a program that's never bought a player.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think that, you know, he's
like, he doesn't even
his know. Only experience is this started, you know, a few months ago. So he only knows he's
was he involved with any recruits in the 2022 class?
Yes. You know, I mean,
was he involved
this,
with
this whole thing is a game of semantics. A&M's collective absolutely did deals with recruits. I do think Saban went a little far. Or maybe made a big assumption when he said
bought the
entire class. Yeah. I don't think that's true. Maybe that'll be true in future classes, but I don't think it was true in 2022 because a lot of recruits didn't even know this was, you know, that this was a opportunity for them yet. So they were signing without knowing that.
The whole nature that everything Jimbo said in this press conference was 100% correct and true. That to me, you know, like you're not in a position to say that. And I know I'm parsing his words, but that's the first line of your.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. He doesn't know what happened before 2021, but he's saying that he's drawing a line in the semantic sand, basically.
Stu, he also doesn't know. He didn't represent every recruit that they signed.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So, but he's also not denying that the collective, he's saying that. Jim, because, you know, to me, the most like eye rolling moment was when they asked Jimbo about collectives. And he's like, I don't know anything about it. I don't know what our collective does. I don't know anything they do.
Yeah. So here's what I am convinced. It is total BS. There is no way you can tell me coaches who are control freaks of everything, especially their rosters, have no idea who is working on their behalf to get players.
Right.
You yourself, Stu Mandel, did a story and you've done good work on NIL, but about NIL. And remember, it was a 3-star defensive lineman getting 6 figures. I don't know if you said how many figures, you know, like
$500,000.
Some bunch of rich people are going to spend $500,000 for a 3-star defensive lineman that is going to play for their team. And the coaching staff has no idea, you know, what's going on. Come on, that makes no sense. None.
Right. I think, you know, this is what coaches have always tried to have, plausible deniability. So if you get caught, if somebody gets caught paying an athlete, oh, I didn't know anything about that. Right. The whole that Rick Pitino claimed he had no idea that one of his assistants was having, you know, hiring strippers and hosting these, you know, recruiting parties, especially in basketball, where how many recruits do they even have in on a given weekend, right? All of those basketball ones. Bill Self, I don't know anything about this. You know, Sean Miller, I don't know anything about this. And I think that's where Jimbo was going today. Like, I don't know what the collective does. I heard there's a collective here, but, you know, I don't really know anything about it. Come on.
Well, when you say, and then this is the other part that, like, gets into what Caspino said, everything he said was true. Oh yeah. He doesn't know anything about it. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he's referring mostly to, I think he's drawing a distinction between
everything is a loaded word on this.
Yeah. He's just drawing a distinction. He's saying that Jimbo was careful with his words. And he just said, and he was trying to say over and over again, some version of, we didn't do it, as in the football program, we didn't buy any players. But as we know, that doesn't mean that a third party didn't do it for them. You know, and I think that first we saw him go off on Lane Kiffin. Now he goes off on Nick Saban, probably, you know, at a much, much, much more explosive magnitude. Don't you think a lot of this, and this is true for Saban too, not just Jimbo, is ego. They don't want anybody to think that any of those kids they signed had anything to do with anything other than what great recruiters they are, what amazing staffs they've built, their track record of putting guys in the NFL. The suggestion that money entered the equation. No. How dare you? How dare you suggest that it wasn't just the hard work of our fine coaching staff and the relationships that we built, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, two thoughts on that. The first, and something you said triggered another conversation that I want to get to in a minute. But like, there was a story recently, probably in the last month or two, about one particular SEC coach. All of a sudden, now he's become a great recruiter, right? And it's like, this is somebody who I don't know if anybody's ever called a good recruiter. But all of a sudden, now this head coach is, now people are doing stories as a great recruiter because.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and this person's done a nice job at the program they've taken over. But like when that collective they have is in the seven figures, that is driving the recruitment of it. And there was a conversation I had, and I don't want to say who the head coach was, but it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. It was about this time of year. And this person like really kind of took issue with the people like us, me, and pretty much everybody around the college football media lavishing praise on Nick Saban. And this person was like, he looked what's going on recruiting wise, what they do. And it was like a lot of finger pointing on this. And my kind of reaction was like, look, there's a bunch of coaches who are in the same, basically in the same business there in the SEC. They're operating similarly. He's thriving. His team is thriving. Bill Landis just did a story probably a couple of weeks ago for us on the hit rate of their five stars related to everybody else's. He has massive staff turnover. I think this is a piece of it, is the talent acquisition is a huge piece of this. And I think there's a lot of coaches who are like, this stuff has been wild and crazy. And it's, as you said, plausible deniability. What is happening for some recruits and their families who are moving and getting jobs and all sorts of different things that are, a lot of people have said they're in a different game than us,
I
they
know
being the
this.
SEC.
Jimbo knows how to play to his constituents. And, A&M went 8-5 last, no, 8-4 last year. I didn't play in a bowl game. And but the moxie that Jimbo carries himself with, and by turn the fan base, you would think that they're a national championship contender every year. And so as we're speaking, Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated just put up a story talking to Texas A&M AD Ross Bjork, who says, first of all, that he notified the SEC office last night. He thinks that Nick Saban violated the SEC sportsmanship bylaws. What did his coach do
I know,
then?
yeah.
I don't know why Nick Saban would say what he said, except he's threatened, Bjork told Sports Illustrated. There is a saying, an emperor who loses their dynasty lashes out. He seems to be making excuses. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce. Did they or did they not play in the national championship game last year? And are they or are they not the preseason number one team going into the season?
Yeah,
He's
wow.
losing his dynasty already? He might at some point. I will say that I do think Saban does feel, I don't know if threatens the right word,
Unsettled.
unsettled. Correct. Perfect. He doesn't like that the rules changed overnight on him. He's used to having the ability to basically recruit whoever he wants. They haven't always finished number one. Georgia has certainly had those years where they finished number one, but they're right at the top. And now there's this new factor that's been entered into the equation, and he doesn't like that. But I kind of look at last night, and you asked, like, did he mean to say that they bought the players? I kind of think he probably didn't intend to go that far, but what do I know? But the 7 minutes or whatever leading up to that was definitely a calculated thing. Like I said, I think this was his kind of his last stand. Like, well, we've tried to comply by what the rules to this point about, you can't offer NIL money to recruits. If this is what everybody else is going to do, then I guess we're probably going to have to enter the game here soon. And once they do, I don't know that A&M is going to be beating Alabama and recruiting anymore. Unless A&M does turn into a national championship program this year. I think he, when people were very perplexed, as was I last week, when he, and by the way, I like 70-year-old Nick Saban. He tells it like it is, right? He said that this is killing parity. And everybody was like, parity
You've won
from
almost every national title. You
what
killed
parity is
parity.
there? First of all, what parity is there? And second of all, you're the most glaring exception to the parity. Well, I think it's one of those things where you're using a word that doesn't mean what it doesn't actually mean what you're
I
saying
think,
it,
you know, I
but
think I, you know what I think it meant? I think he was you, I think we all interpret it as PARITY, and he really meant PARODY. So.
he doesn't mean parity as and he made it seem like this is what he meant, that like everybody, he says, well, everybody plays by the same rules, everybody has the same number of scholarships, Okay, yes. Technically, Ball State has the same number of scholarships that it can offer as you do, Nick. You're not competing. They're not competing with you for recruits. I just think he means like there used to be a certain set of guidelines that you had to follow. And we were very good at thriving in that. And then all of a sudden, everything changed last summer. And there's somebody that's doing it better. That's why I said on Twitter, okay, I get why Jimbo feels like he's been somebody's insulting him and he has to defend his honor and da 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 da. But if he were being really honest, he could say, we just outsmarted you guys. Like, we figured out how to use NIL and to benefit us in recruiting before you guys did. And we got all these five stars. So, you know, sorry to you. Sorry, somebody else had to come and crash the party. But he's not going to say that, obviously. But that's basically what happened. A&M in this past recruiting cycle figured out the way, you know, I don't know if they were the first collective or not, but they certainly were the most advanced or farthest along. And they
were most aggressive.
There's others that have since, you know, like Tennessee's that are very aggressive, but they set the standard and they figured it out first. And I say, congratulations to them. Others would say they're cheating their asses off and they should be punished.
So a lot to unpack. Here's how I thought of this. So like I said, last night I was out for drinks with some friends and I'm looking at the text thread between you, me, Max, and Andy Staples. And I'm just kind of like, how much have I had to drink? You know, like it was just like a little bit surreal. I came home, you know, there were several texts in there.
Bruce, do we need to be worried that you're going out and getting sloppy drunk on a Wednesday night?
We do not.
What's going on there in Los Angeles?
So I look and I remember a couple of, and I came home and it's just very, very surreal. And one of the things I thought of is like, man, this is probably the greatest night in Paul Feinbaum's career.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Texags.
No, I think it's good for Texags and Billy Lucci. I think it's great for Paul Feinbaum. I don't think it's good for Greg Sankey because I don't know how long ago it was when Mike Slive, the late commissioner, had really tried to clean up the image of the SEC. I'm not sure how much they cleaned up the SEC, but they tried to clean up the image of the SEC. And we both have a ton of respect for Mike Slive. But, you know, as they started to dominate, now all of a sudden, this was just like so much different. Like if you're part of me would the only thing I'd rather see be more into watching than when A&M plays Alabama is actually the meetings in Destin.
Oh, I would kill to see the meetings in Destin. I'm curious to see
how, like, if you're Greg Sankey, how do you feel about this? You know, there's an aspect of like any publicity is good publicity. This is not that because this is mudslinging where it not only makes pretty much the whole conference look bad, but I think you're also talking about some of the stuff that is going to come out I don't think if you're Jimbo, you wanted to challenge people to go start looking into, you know, every recruitment he was involved with that may have raised eyebrows. Or if you're Nick Saban, I just don't think you want to poke the bear that much like that.
I think Greg Sankey will get in that room and without question, it'll be a mad Greg Sankey. And he will say, you guys have got to cut this out immediately. We should be keeping this stuff in house. If you've got a accusation to make, make it to the league privately, et cetera. I'm sure he will say that.
But this is different. This is different than Lane Kiffin popping off on social media. This is Nick Saban. This is
a level of aggressiveness from Jimbo. First from Saban, but 10 times that from Jimbo that you just do not see. You do not see coach say that somebody should slap the other coach upside the head, that he's a narcissist, that, you know, when somebody tells you, somebody shows you who they really are, believe, like, it's just a downright, you know, verbal assault. And yeah, that Greg Sankey's going to want nothing to do with that. Now, you're right. Like the SEC in the 90s kind of stunk, to be frank. And it was in part because everybody got sanctioned. Everybody turned each other in and got sanctioned. And if you're somebody who's looking for a way that the SEC could lose its dominance a little bit, you know, that would be it. But I think the climate is so much different today. Nobody believes that the NCAA the ability to shut any of this down, much less like a whole league. And I also just think like public I mean, at the end of the day, the stuff these guys are getting so heated about is just not seen as taboo. Not universally, but like by a large percentage of the population, it's just not outraged that players are getting money. In fact, I think it's what
I was going to. One thing that one of the comments that Jimbo said, you know, he was really outraged that Saban was basically making accusations towards the 17-year-olds and their families.
Yeah, I don't know that he did.
No, but that's how he was framing it. And I think it was really more about, no, it's your program. It's not, I'm not, one of the things that I would say though is for a lot of the 17-year-olds, and this reminds me of the Arizona State scandal, albeit on a smaller scale, was some of the things that have come out, not just from former Arizona State staffers, but also recruits who were kind of involved in that. And how it started to get out was some of those recruits would tell other coaches at other schools kind of what was going on. And the thing that one of the assistants I talked to from a different place pointed out is like most recruits and their families don't really know what the recruiting rules are. You know, they right. change a lot. There are certain things. And so the idea that what's involved maybe for, you know, on the front end of recruits, I think they're all kind of new to it unless you've had like brothers who come through this or a high school coach is very involved. So it's like, what may be going on? You just may think that's standard operating procedure and how it goes, you know? And it's like, oh, this is what goes on everywhere and, or what goes on with top recruits and so be it. And, you know, like, I guess where I wanted to go with this is with this dirty laundry that has been aired by two of the most prominent and one of the probably 10 most prominent coaches in college football right now. Do you look at them any differently or their legacies any differently?
Not yet, but that's, you know, that's going to play out here over the next couple of years. I mean, I think Jimbo, by going as far as he did, and again, we're talking team that went 8-4 last year. They did beat Alabama for the first time under Saban, but they're not there yet. When you go that far on the greatest coach in the sport, you're kind of opening yourself up to, well, you better dethrone him, right? You better back up those words and take him down. If Alabama, if it, you know, it's games in Tuscaloosa this year, Alabama was always already going to be out for revenge. If they beat them 52-24, like they did a couple of years ago, you know, that goes back on Jimbo. Now the flip side of it would be, they take that number one class they just signed and they go and they become the new Alabama. And then he's all forever viewed as the guy who stood up to Saban and then took him down. But I don't, that's going to take a couple of years to play out, right?
Yeah. Who would you be more interested to be in the head of? Greg Sankey or Jimmy Sexton? Jimmy Sexton, I mean, by the way, for people who don't know, is the agent of both of these guys and represents half the SEC.
I'm more interested to see what Greg Sankey would do, but you raise an interesting point. Can't Jimmy Sexton broker peace between these two? No,
I don't know. I like Nick Saban's the biggest dog in the yard. You know, it's like, I don't think anybody's telling him what to do or how to, you know, like, I just don't think, and honestly, Jimbo is a strong will to beat.
Yeah. Nobody's telling him what to do. Ego.
No, nobody's telling him what to do. Like, one of the things that came to mind a lot when I watched and rewatched his comments today and the kind of like the indignation of like, you know, what Saban said was one of the first things I ever did at Fox Sports when I got there was I did a sit down with him on camera at ACC Media Days. And it was on the heels of Jameis Winston and the crab leg story. And some of the stuff Jimbo said at the time was like, ugh. And then, you know, over time, it didn't hold up. And I just kind of thought about that as I was, you know, kind of watching this a little bit. It's just, it's one of these things, honestly, where nobody involved comes out looking good.
No. And I do wonder, you know, as you mentioned Sankey, you remember that we do have a somewhat of a precedent for this, which is Lane Kiffin, when he got the Tennessee job, accused Urban Meyer of cheating at a, if it was a booster event or, but yeah, he got up and said like they had to cheat to get this kid from us. And Mike Sly, I came down on him. I think they publicly reprimanded him. Okay. I'm sure that's the the bare minimum of what's going to happen here. These guys are going to get reprimanded. But does Sankey have the stones to go beyond that and actually suspend them?
No way. Mike Sly, by the way, much different, you know, kind of aura about him than where Greg Sankey's at. Not to say they don't respect Greg Sankey, but also Lane Kiffin taking over Tennessee, where he's, you know, new to it and kind of coming in guns blazing. Much different than Nick Saban, much different than certainly Jimbo Fisher. So, and I don't remember, like, Urban, I don't feel like shot back.
I don't think he did.
No.
But I remember, like, Slive hated Kiffin and the other coaches hated Kiffin at that time. Now I think he's like
music. Endearing and charming. Yeah.
So wait, you know. Bruce. Texas A&M opens the season September 3rd against Sam Houston. You don't think Sankey could say, how dare you? You're suspended for the Sam Houston game.
I'm curious what he does with Nick Saban on it. I don't know. I don't think he's going to suspend him for Sam Houston State.
Probably not, but it just kind of depends on what kind of message you want. Do you want to shut this down or not? Like, otherwise, you could see this going on, not just between those two, but, you know, in this – as this NIL collective era just keeps going and going and getting, you know, probably more and more out of control, you could have coaches, you know, the SEC teleconference, or do they still do that? They get like 7 minutes each. Could just be like a weekly who's pointing their finger at whom. Alabama, by the way, opens against Utah State before the big Texas game. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I would imagine, first of all, I think the reporters who are going to Destin this year are going to have themselves quite a bit to write about. And I'll be interested to see if Sankey can ramp this down a little bit. Remember, he's the one that flew to DC with George Kliavkoff. He's been very vocal about the need to regulate NIL in some way. They lobbying the senators to do so. You know, he at least publicly is anti NIL collective, and now but no conference has more schools doing that than his own conference, and I have a feeling Alabama's hasn't gotten into it to this point is about to very soon.
All right, as always, you can send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. I'm sure this will be a hot topic for more than the weekend. It will have legs, and we appreciate you guys loading up a second podcast. We felt like this warranted as much as probably anything we've seen in a while.
At least since the day Texas and Oklahoma, you know, since Brent Zornerman's at the center of everything in college football, since the day he broke that story last summer, and now he covers Texas A&M. So he was there asking questions to Jimbo today. Yes. Thanks for tuning in for a second episode this week. We'll see you next time.